Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning. Welcome in Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. It's Nick Schapkowski and Arthur Arkish with you until 9 a.m. Talking Bears, recapping their 24-20 Thanksgiving Day victory over the Detroit Lions. 312-644-6767 is your number to call. Text messages welcome as well. 67011. This segment brought to you by your local Ford dealers and Built Ford Tough F-150, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. A guy yesterday that I thought played a very good second half. I don't know about the first half as much, but the second half I thought he stood out. You don't see his name on the stat sheet a whole heck of a lot. Credited with two tackles yesterday, no sacks, no quarterback hits necessarily, but he also was, I think, based partly on his reputation, responsible for drawing a holding call that was costly to the Detroit Lions. I'm talking about none other than the best paid man in this Chicago, and that is Khalil Mack. What were your impressions of his game yesterday and kind of over the last month or so? Because he's got one sack his last five games, and yeah, the Rams thing was kind of a different story, and that was about as bad as we've seen him in a Bears uniform. But yesterday in the second half, it just was constant of, okay, yep, there's him forcing to play entirely to the other side of the field because he is, even in times that he's drawing two or three offensive players right. on him,
right.
he is causing havoc and causing problems for opposing offenses, even though it's not always consistently enough
sure.
as you'd want.
Yeah, I think that because of the record contract, that's why you consistently want the splash plays so often. I don't know how realistic that is, especially when you don't have other guys capitalizing on the attention he is drawing and then forcing them to adjust and maybe giving him more opportunities. He had the big tackle for loss right out of the tunnel to begin the second half. That set up their first three and out. And as you said, I believe he did coax a holding call later on. I got to go back and watch the game closer. I'm not going to lie. We got home late and I haven't been able to give a good thorough second review of the game and been able to isolate him on a lot of individual snaps the way I like to, and eventually we'll get to. But yeah, I mean, when you see the quiet box scores and there don't seem to be sort of commensurate with the money he's making, I get why there would be potential frustration here. And with that said, I just think that it's obvious that every team begins building their offensive game plan around stopping this guy, and that's the way it should be with what he's getting paid. And all I will say is if the Bears are going to play meaningful football, not only into Thursday night, but beyond over these final four games as the competition gets tougher, he's going to have to show up in the box score even more. It can't just be creating opportunities for his opponent, for his teammates. He's going to have to do more. Obviously, he has completely ruined a lot of days already for the Minnesota Vikings, but between now and then, he's going to have some big opportunities. So, I don't buy it all for a second. Last week, there was a lot made about, I believe, Matt Nagy saying that maybe Khalil Mack has been more dominant this season than he was last season. I just don't know how you could make that argument because just look at the numbers. And
he had an awesome September. Like it was, whether it's the Packers game, the Broncos game, it was like down after down after down. Like, holy crap. You can't convince me that hasn't regressed and regressed significantly. Not to say that he's not making an impact, because in the second half yesterday, defensively, and I thought it was a well-played defensive second half for the right. Bears, he was playing as well as anyone. I mean, consistently in the backfield. But in the first half, there were those times there, especially it was, I don't know if you were watching or you had the TV feed or if you had the Westwood feed when you were listening to the game yesterday while there in the press box in Detroit. But there's part where Troy Aikman's kind of breaking down in the first half. Okay, Khalil Mack, highest paid player on the Bears, one of the highest paid players in the NFL.
Right.
You're counting on him for this. Here's his stat line. He does so much that he dictates double teams and triple teams, and he dictates so much of your play and your design and all of this. And the first play they show, they ISO Khalil Mack, and I forget who the running back is, but the tight end just buries him for a 9-yard gain or so.
Uh-huh.
And it just was a very inopportune time for
right.
Khalil Mack of like, all right, here he is. And he's always getting double teamed and triple teamed. And it's literally the tight end just drives him 6 yards back
right.
for a decent run. And it's like, okay, well, he's not always triple teamed. He's not always double teamed.
And that should never happen, frankly. A tight end should never be winning against Khalil Mack.
Yeah,
so I'll look forward to going back to watch that play specifically.
There was one on Troy, or when Aikman kind of mentions that, and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, he looks like Mack's on roller skates on this play.
Yeah, timing.
And I think the Bears got a stop, so it didn't end up not really mattering, but it just the timing of it broadcast-wise was like, all right, well, that Troy is 100% right. It just could not have happened at a worse time, at least
right.
in the broadcast for that.
Let me ask you again. I got to watch Mack a little bit closer. I think he's playing at a high level. I don't think he's playing at the same elite level he was early on last season, and especially after he comes back from the ankle injury. But what did you think about Leonard Floyd, his game? But really, more specifically, what did you think about the ridiculous roughing call? Well, I'll only call it ridiculous until I hear what you think. But
well, what makes it that more ridiculous to me is that what happened right before it, and I forget who the Lions player was that hit Trubisky.
Yeah.
With the official
Tavon Wilson
standing
yeah.
right there.
Right.
And like they have the still shot and his head is zoomed in right on the play. And like if you're not going to throw that flag, then what flag are you going to throw?
Yep.
So that was, I don't know, maybe it was just a little bit of jaded eyes that I watched it and I thought it was like, oh, you're going to call that now?
Sure.
That's what you're going to throw a flag on? That was my initial reaction when I saw it.
That's a fair point. It did seem like the officials had a makeup call shortly after missing that was very, very egregious roughing. A shoulder pad straight to Trubisky's mm-hmm. head. And he was, I guess he did get hit later in the game and his head did slam against the turf. I know he was in the blue medical tent at one point in the fourth quarter being checked for a concussion. So, whether they were still worried about that hit earlier, again, there was another one later on. But yeah, that was a bad miss. At the same time, there was a 3rd and 15 throwaway, I believe, that Leonard Floyd, pushed Blau pretty far
yeah.
after the fact, I thought. So, to me, that was just such a boneheaded play by Floyd.
Sure.
And he's someone who's playing well, but he's also not playing the way he was in the second half of last season, I don't believe.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Not affecting the quarterback 100%. The same way.
Sure.
Right.
And that's when I know that he was, when he came out of Georgia, I don't want to say excuse, but the reason that was given for, oh, well, he's going to be a great rusher and he's going to get to the quarterback and his sack numbers aren't high because they had him do everything. They had him play coverage. They had him do all this different stuff.
Right.
And it's like, well, why do you only have, was it 9 or 10 sacks in his college career?
Even.
Like,
yeah.
And it was like, that seems like it's lacking for a guy that's supposed to be this elite pass rusher. And what do you know? You get to the next level, the highest level of football, and sack numbers just still aren't there.
Right. Yeah, it'll. I mean, I assume he's going to be back next season. Remember, they picked up the 5th-year option. I think it's set to pay him. I'll have to check on that. I think it's around $15 million, but it's guaranteed for injury only. So I wonder whether there's going to be a hard conversation regarding that, or whether the view will be that Khalil Mack's cap number is going to just jump up next year. You don't have a first-round pick. Normally you find these studs mm-hmm. at this position with your premium pick. So maybe kind of the grass isn't greener, one of those things, and Floyd is back. I don't think he's been a problem for the defense at all. I mean, he's a good, rounded player. But as Shep just said, I mean, I feel like whether the coaches aren't using him that way or whatever, but he's still, his assets are right now as valuable in coverage and versus the run is just
right.
getting after the passer. And that's not what you trade up for to get the number 9 overall.
Exactly.
Pick.
And it's like, I don't want to say there's not value to what he's done well, but
right.
it's way too often that's what you hear the praise for is, oh, look how well he dropped back in. He picked up this running back out of the
right.
backfield and took that away. And it's like, well, that's great, but you were drafted 9th overall. You were traded up to get four to hit the quarterback and continue to drill him into the ground, and that just has not been the case with any consistency. I thought that he did. Yeah, I think you're right. Last year, he did pick up the pace. He, as the season went on, especially late in the year, but that just has not been there with any consistency again this season.
Well, and remember the way this season started, of course. Week one, he gets David Bakhtiari on skates with that bull rush we hadn't seen in the first three-plus seasons, and you're like, whoa. Is this what it's going to be now with, you know, Chuck Pagano and Ted Monachino? Maybe they are working. They talked all offseason about expanding his repertoire, pass rush-wise and all that. Haven't seen it consistently. So another guy who will probably have to step up his game even to another level. His defense is playing well, but if the Bears are going to at least take care of their own business, if we're going to use the P word for a moment and talk playoffs, they obviously have to run the table. They still might not even get in if they do. But those, you know, another guy who I think is gonna have to step up. Shep, I got a question for you.
Sure.
We got texters chiming in on this as well. Matt Nagy's decision to eschew what I believe would have been a 49-yard field goal in the dome on 4th and 6. So it's that same comedy of errors sequence in the first half where at one point they have a 1st and 32 after a third penalty in the sequence. They're able to kind of make back some of that ground, make it a reasonable, I guess at least make it a decision on 4th and 6. But again, you're in a dome. Eddie Pinheiro is supposed to have this big leg. What'd you think about not taking those points?
I did not like that part of it. I thought you were playing with essentially, I don't know, I thought you're with house money, if you can call it such a thing. But you start 1st and 32 and you make it into manageable like that. You're already ahead. You didn't expect to be where you're at right here. Walk away. Take your chance at 3 points. That was where my thinking was on that part of it. And if you're not going to trust him in that situation, kicking in a dome, controlled conditions, when are you going
when
to trust him?
Right.
And you're going to, if this is all going to work out, if it all is going to, you're going to run the table and it's going to be club dub from now until January, and you go 10-6 and you're a playoff team, it's going to come down to a kicker at some point.
Absolutely.
And if you can't trust him in that situation, then how are you going to trust him to trot him out there in less than ideal conditions to kick a game-winning kick against the Cowboys or the Chiefs or whatever it might be?
We are totally on the same page on that. Yeah, I think I don't think Matt Nagy is doing his kicker any favors in the confidence department. Remember, of course, what happened out in L.A. He misses the first one from 47. They don't give him a chance from 48. Then he goes back out there from 49, of course, and misses again. So, I think that there's probably, probably a need to repair some of Pinheiro's confidence at this point. And he did come, you know, he made the chip shot, I believe, a 30-yarder later that they needed from him at the end of the first half. But, that seemed like an opportunity there that was kind of tailor-made to see if you could get your kicker back on track a little bit. Nagy decided to go for it on 4th and 6, the pocket immediately caved from the edges. I believe both Charles Leno and Bobby Massey gave up pressures on that one, and Trubisky threw it at his receiver's feet. It was not a very inspired 4th and 6 play call.
Yeah, none whatsoever.
Or execution, I should say. I don't know about the play call.
Where are you kind of at, like, this modern NFL? Modern, I don't even want to say just NFL, but it's taken over the college game as well, of it being much more okay to go for it on 4th down, not sit on your kicker to go and get you 3 points, but to play for 6 or to play for 7 instead. It's kind of as a whole. I mean, I know that every situation has its own story behind it, and it's all unique, but kind of just as a whole of how it's become much widely more accepted of, all right, 4th and 3, I'll take my chances to get 6 points instead of just taking the chance at 3 right here. Where do you kind of sit on that versus, because I know that the NFL that we grew up watching, I mean, this looks like a foreign game almost on at least decision-making in that case.
I mean, I dig it. I'm all for being aggressive. I'm definitely all for being aggressive if it's rooted in analytics. And, you know, a lot of these, the smarter teams right now are leaning on analytics heavily. The best team in football right now, the Baltimore Ravens, is also the team that is going for it and having more success on 4th down than any other. And there was a great story in The Athletic a couple weeks ago just talking about the analytics influence. They've got young 20-year-old that's really
John Harbaugh
his ear on game day, and that's obviously had a profound effect for them. Of course, having Lamar Jackson and that just unbelievable offense will also fuel some confidence that you're going to pick up some of those 4th downs. What do you think? Are the Ravens the best team in football right now?
I mean, if I were to say Ravens 49ers Super Bowl, I mean,
here for it.
Yeah.
You're here for the preview this Sunday.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
round
awesome.
One this time. That's I don't trust the Patriots. As weird as it sounds, I don't trust the Patriots offense. And that can be famous last words.
Of course.
That can come back to bite you in the rear. But tell me who you have more confidence in right now, because that Lamar Jackson thing, what they did on Monday night, just you fly cross country, take on a Rams team that I know they're struggling. I know they're not the same Rams team as a year ago, but to right. do what they did to them, that is nothing short of absurd. And it's barring health, I guess, is the only concern. Like, just might as well just start etching Lamar Jackson's name on the MVP trophy, because it's as great of a year as Russell Wilson's had, as great of a year as some others have had. It's not even a debate at this point to me.
Yeah, I think it's still going to be interesting. I think his and Russ's numbers are really comparable, but certainly the you know, the juxtaposition of what Lamar has done in this recent stretch with the signature wins, the dominance in primetime versus mm-hmm. Russ, they kind of win, actually, Seattle did, in spite of him out in Philadelphia rather than because of him. But he's going to get a big opportunity, of course, Monday night in Minnesota, I believe,
yeah.
versus Kirk Cousins, another guy who you wouldn't think should be in any type of MVP discussion, but go look at his numbers and look at what he's done since that loss to the Bears at Week 4 in Soldier Field. It's not as crazy as it might sound.
Yeah, that's the weird part, is because we went into this year and Kirk Cousins was like the laughing joke of, oh my God, they're in that contract and that guy can't play in a big-time game. Oh, if it's a 500 opponent, he's awful. And he has been outstanding. Now, yep. I think that it helps that he has one of the league's best running games behind him. That
no
only
doubt.
Aids a quarterback. But
wait, what? No, just kidding.
Yeah.
We don't see much here.
What a concept. What a crazy idea, crazy thought that is.
I actually love that offense, too, potentially for Mitch. That Gary Kubiak, Mike Shanahan offense mm-hmm. that they're running now in Minnesota is what I'd like to see Mitch doing. Just, and we've seen more of it with the rollouts and some of the boot action stuff, but that would seem to be even more tailor-made for Mitch than Kirk Cousins, who isn't known for his athleticism.
No doubt about that part of it, but it's just, yeah, I didn't see this Vikings thing coming. I didn't see yeah. this Kirk Cousins thing coming. One, at the start of the year, two, after what the Bears did on that Sunday afternoon down here. Like, wow, this defense is amazing. That Vikings thing's in real trouble going yep. forward, and they've yep. been lights out ever since. 312-644-6767 on the thought of Lamar Jackson. We got the Michigan City. Mark has thoughts on exactly that. What's up, Mark? You're on 670 The Score.
Hello, Chef. How you doing? Congratulations on the marathon of 5 hours and 40 minutes, and congratulations on little Peyton Shepkowski. That's a great football name for a young lady. Oh,
thank you very much, Mark. Thank you very much.
And on Lamar Jackson going forward, I thought of an idea defensively to share with you and Arthur Arkish. That is on second and third down plays where there's like 5-6 yards to go, or a potential passing play where he's got an option where he's going to run or pass, bringing in a fifth nickel back like Jimmy Ward. It has to be a good athlete who has good speed and can chase guys down. And Lamar Jackson's got great open field moves, almost like O.J. Simpson. And a lot of guys miss him, too. So you need a good fifth nickel back. And I know that's going to provide one-on-ones with a lot of other split ends in that. But I would be willing to take a chance if I had a quality nickel back I could put out there and spy on him.
Yeah, I think that's easier said than done, because the thing, you said it with Lamar Jackson, appreciate the telephone call, Mark, is that I've never been, I shouldn't say never, but there's few cases wherever I've ever been this happy to be wrong about a player coming out of college. Thought Lamar Jackson was, he'll go down as one of the most exciting, if not best, college football players of all time. Take Louisville football, win a Heisman Trophy with him, essentially play without an offensive line for 2 years and do what he was able to do. I didn't know if that was going to translate. I didn't think it was going to translate. I'll go as far as say that. And his ability to throw the ball, I don't know how much that has changed and gotten better since college. I didn't think it was going to translate to the NFL level. And he's so dynamic with his feet, and they have such a good run game to begin with. That's not just him, that it obviously helps. But I'm ecstatic that I was completely wrong that this guy was going to be I don't know what he's going to be in the pro. No, he's going to be an MVP in the pro is what he's going to end up being.
In his first full year as a starter.
Yeah.
Which would mark 2 years in a row. Patrick Mahomes' first year as a starter mm-hmm. wins the MVP award. It's looking like the future of the quarterback position in the NFL. We'll see about in Chicago. That's not appearing so bright at the moment, even coming off yesterday's big win. But across the league, some exciting young talents at the position, and none more so than Lamar. Just to the caller's point, I'm pretty sure we saw the Chargers try that in the playoffs in January. and actually have success with it. Of course, remember Lamar, a lot of Ravens fans wanted him benched for Joe Flacco at the time because he was struggling so immensely in that game. But the Chargers were down linebackers in that one, and I believe played almost the full game in their sub packages and were able to obviously get a big win before getting thrashed in Foxborough the next week. So, yeah, we have seen that work a little bit. You obviously have to have the personnel to do it, but it is a good idea that we've seen have some success. And I just think, I don't think you can have the Lamar conversation without crediting the whole organization. And that's not to take anything away from the success that he is having and the real and spectacular improvements that he has made. But I'm not sure they happen in a lot of franchises because the way it's set up for him there with Greg Roman, with James Urban, with an open-minded head coach who's willing to reimagine everything you're doing offensively and build around a quarterback, that is a collective success. And it's really just been special to watch. We should all enjoy what we're watching because it doesn't come around very often.
Yeah, that part of it, and it's the part that I've enjoyed as well. This, and I'm by no means a Baltimore Ravens fan. If anything, I grew up a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, so I've never been partial so much to the Ravens. Mm-hmm. But it's this idea, it's such a copycat league. And you see Cliff Kingsbury last year get fired by Texas Tech, immediately hired by Arizona. Right. Well, actually, I guess he was hired by USC to be an offensive coordinator in the short term there. But yeah, he gets the promotion to an NFL head coaching job, even though he never won at Texas Tech with some great talent that went through there. And he's just this copycat league of, all right, there's young offensive-minded guys. They got to be your next head coach, and they got to run things. And meanwhile, John Harbaugh, who came up and formed his way by being a special teams coach, who knows, what is it, 13 years now, 12 years now, he's been at this and doing it aside of Bill Belichick as well as just about anyone in the league for that long. It's like, you don't need that. You need a guy that knows how to be open-minded, right, be able to take an offensive coordinator and listen to his ideas, implement them, and they have as unique an offense as there is probably in the NFL right now, and it's being run at an incredibly high level because of that part of the open-mindedness to that. And since we're on Lamar Jackson, this I just have to say this because it's absurd to me, but the idea that in all likelihood the NFL MVP is going to be younger than the Heisman Trophy winner this year. I don't know who won the NFL MVP the year that Chris Winkie won the Heisman because he was like 27 or 28 when he won it at Florida State. That can't be something that's happened more than like one or two times in the history of football.
Right.
Like that is because Joe Burrow is 3 weeks older than Lamar Jackson. Like, that is going to be insane, assuming that both of those two end up winning those big primetime awards. We have to pause for a timeout. 312-644-6767, your number to call. It's Nick Shepkowski and Arthur Arkish in for Mullion Haw. And what is a Bears Monday on a Friday? Built Ford Tough Bears Monday on a Friday on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Anything can happen, and so we'll enjoy it tonight and get back with our families and spend some time, and then tomorrow be right back at it. You guys know it, right? Thursday against Dallas, heck of a team, and we're going to keep our focus on them and just try to keep this thing going.
That's Matt Nagy yesterday after the Bears' 24-20 win over the Detroit Lions on Thanksgiving Day. Gets them back to 6-6 and keeps them technically in the playoff hunt, even though they need to win out and they need some help along the way as well. Welcome back in, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Nick Shepkowski and Arthur Arkish with you up until 9 this morning. This segment being brought to you by Half Price Books, the Half Price Books, where you go for that one. So Matt Nagy there speaking on the Dallas Cowboys, talking them up. Oh, they're a great team. Well, they're 6-6-2, and they have a pretty good defense. But offensively, yet again yesterday, the Dallas Cowboys, a team that's in flux. And each time that I see Jerry Jones in front of a camera, each time I see Jerry Jones do what he kind of did last week, all I can think in my head is, what is the offer he's going to make Lincoln Riley to be the next coach of the Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah, that would seem to be the, maybe the most logical pivot there. I'll tell you, Shep, are you surprised? And again, I was driving back from Detroit with Hub and have not had a chance to really get into the Dallas Cowboys loss to the Bills just yet. We'll do that as the week goes on. But how much was Jason Garrett at fault? I mean, how badly outcoached were they, the Cowboys staff, by Sean McDermott and his coaching staff, A, and then B, if the answer is what I'm expecting it to be, were you at all thinking yesterday could be the day for Jason Garrett after Jerry Jones' comments last week in Foxborough?
Part of it was, I don't know how much of it was as much coaching as it's just been kind of a regression for the Cowboys. Because the Cowboys, for how many years there did we sit and that was, it was like their offensive line was here, there is a significant gap, and that's, okay, that's the second best offensive line in the NFL after the Cowboys.
Right.
That's not the case anymore. And I thought that was evident yesterday. I think that's been evident for chunks of this year.
Okay.
So there's been regression there. But it's also an offense with Dak Prescott that we're going on 2 weeks. They've scored, what, one offensive touchdown in the last 2 weeks now. If it's not the Jets that they've beat up or the Dolphins that they've beat up.
Yeah, no quality wins
yet. It's their quality wins or their quality numbers even that they've put up against good teams. Mm-hmm. Are lacking. They've beaten up on some bad teams in the NFC East, and yeah. I guess it's kind of like we said about the Bears all morning. It's, hey, you better do that than not do it, okay. But it's feels like a lot of empty calories that you've kind of seen from Dak Prescott and that offense so far to me this year.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, Jerry Jones said after the game that now is not the time for a coaching change and that he's you know, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but that he's doing whatever he can to make sure that this team is still on a Super Bowl trajectory and that he still believes in the talent to get there and so on and so forth. The fact that he probably paid the wrong guy in that backfield. I don't really envy the situation he was in because I didn't really think that you could just replace Zeke Elliott. And I don't, you know, I think the value of running backs obviously is low and they are the most replaceable position, but that doesn't mean you can replace a Zeke and he didn't have leverage in that scenario. But good luck finding anyone now who will think that paying Zeke and not Dak was the right decision,
sure.
Especially in light of, as you said, the O-line not what it was, Elliott not looking anywhere near like what he looked like in his two seasons leading the league in rushing. So they've got issues as they come to Chicago. I don't know that there's been any sign of quit yet. I mean, I've seen some of the viral videos of the clapper Jason Garrett not getting embrace from his players when they do win and him looking like the loneliest man in the world when things aren't going so well. But I think we can say definitively, say what you will about Matt Nagy's play calling, some of his in-game decisions that have obviously been very questionable. The team's still playing for him. He still has the respect of that locker room, to be sure. And I don't know for sure if it's like that on the other side. So I do think that's an element that's going to be discussed a lot this week as two desperate teams get ready to collide once again on a national stage.
Yeah, and it's just it's so much of... I can't get past it with this week of the Bears. It's such a dud. It's such a disappointment. Oh, they're sitting at 6-6, and if it's they're not winning the NFC North, if they somehow manage to get in this thing, which I would be stunned, shocked, and I'd thrilled, but stunned and shocked if they were to even be in contention 2 weeks from now. But if they were to be in that situation,
right?
Like that would be it'd be great, and it'd be a great turnaround. Cowboys sit with the same record, and they sit in a division that is just awful. When you have Washington and the Giants there, you have a Philadelphia team that's been a disappointment by what their standards are, and it's, it's a playoff team right now. They're in first place in their division, or at least tied for first place in their division, and if the playoffs started today, they'd be in. It just is just a crap draw in terms of the divisions this year the Bears as well.
Right, and I think part of this is that there are a very select few good football teams, I mean, in both conferences.
Sure.
And that's why you just said, I mean, an average team or maybe just above average team is going to be representing the NFC East. Obviously, they're not going to get a wild card, but and you feel, you know, if Seattle and Minnesota are able to, take care of their business and end up as the two wild cards, I do feel pretty good about them as solid teams. But who knows? The Bears have a chance to go improve to 8-0 versus the Vikings and Lions over Matt Nagy's tenure. That's hard to wrap your head around. And to me, it's just hard to figure how Dalvin Cook can look so awesome versus everyone else. And then the Bears defense, we got into it a little bit going all the way back to Week 4. Remember who they didn't have in that game, right? Akeem Hicks,
yeah.
Roquan Smith.
Yeah.
I mean, the shorthanded effort that they put together in that game and made Dalvin Cook look human for like the only time this season for the most part. And Kirk Cousins have been playing at an MVP caliber level since. So, it's going to be interesting. I'm fascinated to see what several of these teams are going to do now with kind of everything in front of them.
So we'll keep it in the NFC then, kind of based off of what you just put together there. Who do we know is good? San Francisco, I know, is good. That mm-hmm. defense has played far too well all year long, even though they had the little blip a couple weeks ago against Seattle. I think it was a Monday night football, or was it Monday night or Sunday night, whichever it was, that they had the blip against Seattle on. But New Orleans, they get the bounce back win, even though they had the dud a few weeks ago against the Falcons. They win last night, avenge that loss. Green Bay, you hear a lot of people, oh, they're a fraud. They're going to be exposed. Well, I still look up and I see their record. They seem like they're a lot better team than they are a bad team. Like, who is good to you in the NFC?
I think you just named the three, but actually, I would go as far as to say I think Minnesota's a better overall team than the Packers. I really do.
Do you?
And I think it's – I'm not saying Aaron Rodgers is you know, washed or anything like that, but coming off that performance last week, the lowest yards per attempt of his career against a great 49ers defense. But he's had a few of those, and it's been a little bit longer since we've seen sustained greatness from Aaron Rodgers. So I think the question of whether he's going to be able to consistently elevate an inferior team is valid, and that's why I think I side with Minnesota over Green Bay. But I think it probably ends there. Even if you include Green Bay, you're talking about four teams, because you can't say anyone legit in the NFC East is like a really
right.
good
Certainly
football team
not
right
there.
Now.
Yeah.
Be dangerous because, you know, the Eagles have the pedigree and the Cowboys do have the number one rated offense, or at least they did going into yesterday in football with a lot of talent on defense. But as far as, teams without a lot of clear flaws, it's two or three to me, and I think I'd side with the Vikings over the Packers as the third one.
Yeah, I know Seattle had the huge win a couple weeks ago against San Francisco, but it's just I find myself having trouble buying into them, and that's like a two-year thing now. And
right.
Pete Carroll probably did a phenomenal job with that team last year. We kind of wrote them off at the start of the year, and then all of a sudden I know that they didn't end up winning a playoff game, but they're a team that's playing wild card weekend. You're like, how the heck did they figured it out yet again? They're in contention for a playoff spot, but I don't see them doing any damage once they get there. It just doesn't seem like seems like there's a pretty significant gap there that's starting to kind of show itself, at least in terms of the NFC. 312-644-6767 is your number to call. Text messages welcome as well, 670-1-1. We are going to pause for a timeout, get back with some more of your telephone calls, talking some Bears-Lions reaction after the 24-20 victory yesterday. It is a Built Ford Tough Bears Monday on a Friday on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Some cool stuff going on in the tent. You come off, the doctor sees you, you took a hit on the field, my head hit the ground, I'm perfectly fine. Go in the tent, answer some questions. We're in Detroit, it's Thanksgiving. I got to go out and lead another drive, so we answered all the right questions, and it's all good.
God. Welcome back in. Happy Black Friday to each and every one of you. It's Nick Shepkowski and Arthur Arkish sitting in for Mully and Hall on this Bears Monday on a Friday. Built Ford Tough Bears Monday on a Friday, brought to you by your local Ford dealers and the Built Ford Tough F-150, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. Maybe that's a sign that Mitch Trubisky actually was concussed. Because if I were to ask him what day it was or what town he was in, I'm not sure I'm getting the right answer. I don't know what confidence I have for him to deliver that, I'm Mitchell Trubisky and I'm in Detroit, Michigan right now. Like, if he were to answer that yesterday, I might think that there might be an issue. Because whenever he answers questions, I get incredibly uncomfortable. And that soundbite that our guy Mike Chen just played coming out of commercial break did not make me feel any more comfortable. Welcome back in Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. So it's Nick Shepkowski and Arthur Arkish. Arthur, kind enough to be in this morning after driving across the great state of Michigan after the game yesterday and getting back here. And I guess we've spent a lot of time on it this morning. What are the impressions of Trubisky after yesterday? What is a grand is there a grand takeaway to be had, or is it a played well against a bad team like we've seen him do against the Giants or do against Tampa last year? Is it as simple as that? Is there anything more to be gained than that? Is there any thought of, oh, well, maybe you're not going to bring in a veteran next training camp and kind of push Trubisky for a job? Is there any conclusion to take after yesterday's game?
No, I don't think there is yet. Positive signs for sure. I mean, we hit on it earlier. The fact that it looked like this thing was really about to go sideways the way the first half ended, the way the second half began on offense with him, not inspiring really any level of confidence. And then to put together two of his better drives that we've seen in his career, obviously, is a really good thing. And the Lions stink, but it's tough to beat a divisional opponent twice in the span of 3 weeks period. And he was able to, when things weren't gray, I think the quote Matt, weren't gray. I think the quote that Matt Nagy used was, when things are gray, make a play. I kind of like that. I hadn't heard him say that before. And I think that's what you look for in
a
franchise quarterback.
If Joe Madden were still around.
Right. So it's encouraging, you know, it's such a week to week league, and I get the, you know, the urge to maybe want to make some grand proclamation based off 1 week, or now what we've seen is a couple solid weeks, if not spectacular, back to back or consecutively from Mitch. But we got to see more. And the cool thing about this is that, he's got a ton that he can answer a lot of questions over the final month of the season, right? We got four games left. The competition gets a lot more difficult. The stakes have risen now again because their backs, they continue to be against the wall. But, of course, you know, they have no margin for error. And that's when I think they still have a chance to learn a lot about him. It's just such a tough thing, Shep, and I'm curious to get your take on this. I mean, Mitch takes a lot of heat, and a lot of it is deserved. There's no doubt about it. But every level of the offense has taken a step backward this year. And Mitch, for whether you agreed with the decision to draft him or not, and I think pretty clearly with the benefit of hindsight, no one agrees with the decision when you look at what Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson are doing elsewhere in the league. But just relative to his lack of experience coming in, you can't ignore it now because he hasn't seen a lot of the same things as often as some of these other guys. And at age 25, you want to be real careful about writing off a kid who's talented, even if he hasn't shown it consistently on the field at the age of 25. So that's where I'm kind of, frankly, I'm conflicted because some of his play can be so bad and so inconsistent and so mind-boggling where you say he's never going to get it. But then you get the flashes like yesterday that kind of pull, bad defense or not, that kind of pull you back in. So I guess I'm kind of, I don't really know where to go. I'm curious to get your take on it.
Yeah, when I kind of evaluate that, it's, to me, it goes a step above it. It's not necessarily a Trubisky question, but when you start to say, and I think you're entirely right when you say it, when the offense has all regressed, where have they gotten better? Allen Robinson's still Allen Robinson. I'd say that he's healthy. He's not necessarily better. He's just healthier this year. He's coming off of an ACL injury last year. And you saw towards the end of last year,
right.
I think in the playoff game, especially against Philadelphia, like, oh, yeah, this is the guy he can be when healthy. I think he was playing with bruised or broken ribs for part of last season. And when healthy, he has been nothing short of great. But you're entirely right about that offensively. Where have they gotten better? Is that all on Mitch Trubisky? Or is that partially on when you bring in a head coach who is supposed to be part of the Andy Reid tree and Andy Reid talks him up as, oh, I trust him with play calling because that's how good of a coordinator as he was. He earned that, and this is the best assistant that I've had, and he's going to be most ready for a head coaching job. Well, part of that, I know that it's the NFL and you're at this level and you get there because of your skills. Part of that's still developing talent. Where has that been developed offensively? Offensive line wise, and I know that's not all on Matt Nagy. It's part on Ryan Pace for seeing, evaluating his players, and giving the extensions to Charles Leno or signing the Massey deal.
Mm-hmm.
But show me what they have done that's been worthy of any praise. I thought the running game looked better yesterday. Run blocking looked better yesterday, but by no means was it great. And also, when you take out the Harrison from Detroit, it's going to look better when you don't have to protect against him. And I know that he plays inside. But it's not all a Trubisky problem to me. Mm-hmm. It's so much deeper than just the quarterback. And I think that we get stuck in that because it's the easy part to look at the quarterback and, all right, winning games. I think sometimes the quarterbacks get too much love for that, whether it's Trent Dilfer and some other ones throughout NFL history. And a lot of times they get way too much, I don't know, negativity thrown their way because the teams lose games. I think with Trubisky he's clearly not as good as the two quarterbacks that were taken in the first round after him in his draft. But to say that the Bears' problems are all a Trubisky problem, I think it goes a lot deeper, especially offensively, than simply saying it's all in number 10.
Yeah, I mean, a good assessment. I largely agree with it. But what it sounds to me like and what I know I feel like is there's still a lot of questions to be answered to find out exactly what Mitch is, to find out what Matt Nagy is, and to find out what this Bears' offense is. Whether those are answered in the next four games remains to be seen. But both of these guys are coming back either way, whether it's Mitch as the unquestioned starter or competing against a veteran and a rookie. That's still the route I'd like to see the Bears take after kind of neglecting the position as much as they have. But he's going to be back, obviously. And then Matt Nagy, he frankly earned a mulligan. After you win Coach of the Year, after what you do in that 12-4 season, and now you see this team at least still fighting, and they're going to be competitive down the stretch. Some of the people out there who are like, fire Nagy, you know, wipe the slate clean, get rid of Ryan Pace and start over, that I really vehemently disagree with, because I think the teams that stay bad are the ones that have no stability. And the Bears have enough things that they should be able to build on here, and to escape that altogether and start over again, to me, would be insane.
Yeah, I think that it's the problem with it to me is it's not so much the Matt Nagy part as it is the Ryan Pace part of, all right, 2018, the regular season was great. You go 12-4, you shock the world, you win the North, you host the playoff game even though you lose it. You're the surprise of at least the NFC last year.
Yep.
And expectations are sky high going into this year. I mean, we're looking at 5 years now where four of them are in all likelihood going to end up without playoff appearances, where three of them were complete and utter just, I mean, laughable teams that were put out there. And you can say that all it was building towards, well it was putting towards 2018, 2019, and it was building towards that. And like, that's fine and dandy. But then if you're not winning in 2019, all the pressure of the world all of a sudden becomes on you, becoming 2020. Because if you show me a GM that shows one playoff appearance in a six-year run who still hasn't gotten his quarterback part right that far in,
oh yeah,
then it's a system that's very, very flawed. And I think that, okay, it's largely based on 1 year of success that that a lot of the bouquets are thrown Ryan Pace's way.
Yep, I think that's fair. I think definitely next season it is going to be the biggest yet for Ryan Pace, and it is going to be, you know, in some ways kind of prove it time, for the lack of a better term for him, especially, you know, considering what I think is a safe assumption that they're going to attack the quarterback position still in some, to some degree. And after watching just what's happened with Mike Glennon and Mitch Trubisky, if you're going to entrust Pace to do it again, it's going to be time to, you know, do what you're going to do or get off the pot. So, yeah, we'll see. It's going to be interesting. I was actually asked yesterday, Shep, I rode over to the stadium with the Westwood One guys. Hub was doing the sidelines, or at least he was supposed to be doing the sidelines until his voice disappeared. And I was asked by one of the guys, what grade would you give Ryan Pace for his tenure? It was just, obviously I hadn't had any time to think about it or whatever, and it was really interesting. I hadn't given it any thought at all, and I settled on a B-. I don't know if that was too, I don't know what you think of that, if that was...
That's a heck of a question.
Right.
We have Eric Edholm coming up here.
Let's see what he thinks.
I feel like I used a B-. We can definitely ask
generous?
That. I think it might be a little generous there.
All right.
I don't know.
Championship caliber defense he's built, in my
opinion. Definitely that.
Yep.
But he's also, it feels almost Lovie Smith-like in ways offensively of just failing to get that part going too. I think I'd give him just a solid C.
Okay.
Kind of average. You've done one thing really well. You've done one thing very poorly. We'll settle in the middle.
So fair.
With the pause for a timeout, Eric Edholm from Yahoo Sports, NFL draft expert, NFL expert, joins us next to talk about all things Bears and Lions and what he saw on Thanksgiving Day football-wise on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.